So hi, hello and welcome again. Oliver Kim is my name and welcome to another episode of Talk Smart. And in this episode, I want to talk about the scientific method and I'd like to give you a short overview of what the scientific method is. And by using an example. Well, one of the issues that we have is that different people, of course, interpret the world differently. For some people, a glass of water is half full. For others, it's half empty. And much depends on interpretation. And while we also interpret data in the sciences, of course, we try to eliminate subjectivity as much as possible. And in the scientific method, we try to have an agreed standard or way of gaining knowledge in the sciences that allows us to make mistakes and then to correct those mistakes. I think that's one of the key things on how science is different maybe from other disciplines in the sense that scientists should always be prepared to throw out old theories and replace them with new ones. And the scientific method is such a cyclical way of gaining knowledge. When we're doing an experiment, and then if it turns out that the experiment proves the theory wrong, then we have to replace the theory. Yeah, so the scientific method fits quite nicely with Karl Popper's principle of falsification. And what I'd like to do is to explain to you the scientific method is, I'd like to use an example which is not from the sciences to show you that the scientific method is also quite useful in everyday life, and that it's actually to a certain extent maybe even a little bit common sense here. Well, I'm going to illustrate this by using the problem that my car does not start in the morning. So I turn the key and it doesn't start. And I'm going to break it down now into the different steps. Well, the first thing is observation. And I observe, I see that the car doesn't start, and I also get feedback from the engine that there's no sound. So it's a neutral observation. Yeah, the car doesn't work. And the car radio also doesn't work. It's kind of weird. Okay. Seems to be a complete total breakdown here. And I'm simply neutrally observing this. And now, this was step number one. As step number two, I have to formulate a hypothesis. Now, a hypothesis is an educated guess. And I'm saying educated. I'm not saying wild guess. An educated guess means that I have to think a little bit about what are the probable causes for my car not to start. I mean, there are several possibilities here. Theoretically, we could be out of fuel. Maybe the battery is dead, or the engine broke, or maybe it's a fuse, an electrical fuse that broke, certain mechanical problems. Yeah. I mean, there are theoretically many possibilities why the car doesn't work. But we have to reduce these possibilities. I mean, we are also observing that the car radio doesn't work, and this probably means that it's an electrical problem, right? So what I'm going to do is formulate an educated guess, and I'm saying, well, I'm guessing that the battery is dead because the temperature is also cold. I mean, that's another observation that I'm making. It's possible, of course, that there's another issue, sure. But to the best of my knowledge, I come to the conclusion that the battery is dead and doesn't work. Now what? Step three. I do an experiment, and I have to test my hypothesis now. And the hypothesis can be tested by exchanging the car battery or by hooking up the car to another car to start it, and I basically have to now make a prediction as well. And if the car does not start, well, then, of course, it must have been a different problem. And if the car now does start, then this indeed confirmed my hypothesis that it was the battery. So this is what I'm doing right now. I go out, I exchange the battery, then I'll see whether it's going to be right or wrong. And then it turns out that the car indeed does start. Okay. In this case, my hypothesis was proven correct, and that's step number four, where I'm forming a conclusion, and the hypothesis was proven correct, and the car does work. And in this case, I come now to the conclusion: if my car does not start, then the battery was broken. Now you're gonna probably say, "Well, you cannot always say that. You can't always say that it's the battery's fault. And if the car doesn't start, maybe it's a different problem next time. And you're absolutely right. But in the natural sciences, what we're doing is when we've confirmed a hypothesis, when we're doing this many times, okay, and when many scientists are confirming a hypothesis, and if there is also evidence from different scientific areas confirming that, then this hypothesis becomes a theory. So a theory is already a pretty strong and important thing because it's been heavily tested. Yeah, many people think, it's just a theory. No. A theory is already pretty solid. Okay, that's already quite valuable. But once we have a theory, then we can use this theory to generalize and say, well, every time when the car doesn't work, then of course it's possible that the battery is dead. Yeah, and now. What we have to do is we therefore in step five we have to repeat the whole thing, and if indeed it turns out that every now and then the car doesn't start and the battery is okay, then I have to come up with a larger, more expanded theory, a more general theory. And this theory could now include that maybe it's not always the battery, but maybe sometimes the fuse is also broken. Yeah, so it could be the case that if you turn the car key if you hear absolutely no sound at all of the engine, or even if the lights work but the engine doesn't start, then this could mean that a certain fuse has broken. Yeah? So what we're doing is we're coming up with a more general theory that takes into consideration more factors. Yeah, so this is the scientific method, and it's important that we're repeating the whole thing, and maybe next time it turns out again that it was another issue that we had, another problem. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to run you through the steps again, then I'm going to end with a conclusion, the quote by Albert Einstein. So step one is observation. So we're observing the environment, we're observing something, and out of that, in step two, we're formulating a hypothesis, an educated guess. We're then, in step three, testing the hypothesis in an experiment. And then we're observing the outcome of the experiment to form, in step four, a conclusion. And this conclusion either confirms or refutes the hypothesis. And then we repeat the whole thing again. And because in the natural sciences, you do never base a theory on one experiment alone, but usually, or there have to be many experiments done by many people, and also maybe different areas that all support a certain theory. And now, when we've done that, of course, we have to be always prepared that our theory maybe is going to be proven wrong the next time, that is what you call scientific progress, okay? I would now like talk a little bit about Albert Einstein, and he said the following: when the number of factors coming into play in a phenomenological complex is too large, scientific method in most cases fails. One need only think of the weather, in which case the prediction even for a few days ahead is impossible. So Albert Einstein himself says now, well, there is a limit to the scientific theory. Sometimes it's very difficult to control the experiment. Sometimes there's simply too many variables, too many factors. I cannot really use this method of observation, hypothesis, experiment, and conclusion on the weather. How am I going to experiment with the weather? So if I have a very large complex system like a weather phenomena or maybe even biological systems, what I have to do is I have to make sure that I'm really asking a very, very precise hypothesis, one that allows me to test it very well. Because in some cases, it's the systems are simply too complex and too large, and the scientific method cannot be properly applied. So I think I'm going to leave it at that right now. Well, I wish you all the best, and see you around next time. Bye-bye.